The night brought the vampires and begged them to stay. The cold made it harsh, too hard to run away. Nowhere to hide, we'll fight for our lives. The day brought the sun, and the vampires undone. Or is it well done? Good evening, and welcome to Gore, a horror podcast to keep you up at night. I'm the Wicked Kitten, always getting into mischief and making everyone mad. And with me, as always, are my creepy co-hosts, the lovely Travis.
Hello.
The endearing, the ethereal Faye.
Hi, hi.
And lastly, the dread you've been feeling since you hit play on this podcast. Dreadly.
Hello.
So, time has passed. The sun has risen. The moon has also risen. And they've lowered. What's the word for not rising? Risening? Unrisening? Unrising?
Unrisening.
Descending?
Descending? Is that what they call it? Well, like, okay, look, basically the sun has gone up in the sky and then left, and then the moon has gone up in the sky and then left about, like, 14 times since the last time you've listened. Unless you live in a different part of the country. But we'll talk about that. For now, let's find out what we've all been doing in a little ditty I like to call. What you doing? What you watching? How you been, Travis?
Doing pretty well. I have been playing a new point-and-click adventure. I started and am almost done with the Return to Monkey Island. Brand new Monkey Island game from original creator Ron Gilbert. It's super fun. I love it. It's got all the same humor. It's got all the sorts of things that make the Monkey Island series great. I'm almost done with it.
Nothing but good stuff about that game.
Yeah. I mean, it's just fantastic. So I've been playing that. Got through New Year's mostly unscathed, which is good.
Mostly?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I did do 2 hours of Diamond Club Streamathon playing Monkey Island, which was fun. But that's kind of been most of it. Keeping up with the other shows, watching. I've actually dove back into the original Iron Chef and become obsessed with it because it's amazing. And we covered it for Those Were the Days. And now I just want to watch all Iron Chef all the time. That was super fun. I don't know if any of you have ever watched that, but it's like if a cooking show was... It's the love child of cooking shows and professional wrestling. But not Japanese. So like everyone's very polite.
I've seen it parodied in like The Simpsons or something.
Futurama has done it.
Futurama.
Simpsons might have done it too.
Not Futurama.
You know, and there were like tons of spinoffs. I mean, there's been an Iron Chef version in just about every country you can imagine at some point. Iron Chef America ran for like 13 years on Food Network.
Maybe I've seen one of those episodes.
I love the concept of the show, but the original Japanese show, there's just something extra special about that. And so I've been falling into that quite a bit. It's been a lot of fun. Just watching movies, playing games, getting ready to put together and build a Warhammer army. You know, because I don't have enough time sinks as it is.
Or money sinks.
You really just have way too much free time, Travis.
Oh, yeah. So much free time. Tons of it. Tons of it.
So, Faye, how you watching? What you doing? What shit? How you been?
I've watched a couple of movies. I watched Deus. That was interesting. I wouldn't really call it horror, but it was still interesting. I did finally watch X and the spinoff. I forget her name.
Pearl.
Yep.
Oh, you watched it without me.
Sorry. You watched it without me.
Well, I watched X without you. I haven't watched Pearl yet.
Oh, I thought you already watched Pearl.
No, we've been waiting.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. It's not like you spoiled it for me or nothing.
Yeah, this happens and then this happens. And oh, no. Other than that, I've been trying to play Gotham Knights, but it likes to keep crashing when I'm riding around on the bike, on the bat cycle. That's not annoying at all, no. And they love forcing you on that damn bike, too. Other than that, that's pretty much been it besides work. You know, peak season, it's kind of busy. Yeah.
I feel that. I feel that. Dreadly. How you feeling? How's it going? What you watching? You watching a little novel? You reading? You read a little bit? You doing a little novel? You writing? I can't do it. Huh? I'm sorry, Stewie. I cannot do you justice.
Nope. No one can. Stewie is unique. Yes. I have not been doing much for a multitude of reasons, but I did play a little game that is pretty much pretty fun to play, but it has the worst name ever. That's a game called Triangle Strategy, which is like, what? Because I haven't met any triangle in there so far.
That's their strategy.
I like how when they announced this game, it was like title, like a placeholder title. It was Project Triangle Strategy. And people were like, oh, it sucks, but you know, it's a temporary title. It's fine. And then they just dropped the project and it's Triangle Strategy. Yeah.
Hmm. Project.
But that game is pretty fun to play. Now I want to play other games like that. Like Ogre Tactics.
Ogre Tactics? Isn't that just beat it with a club?
Yep. But you need Red to goes choose. Faster.
Oh, wait. That's orcs.
It's orcs, and it only goes faster because they believe it goes faster.
Mm-hmm. I'm just waiting for Wesley or Dreadly to play Depersonalization.
Yes. That looks interesting. Maybe soon.
Yay!
Other than that, we've watched a couple of movies together, considering it was Christmas time. And we watched Christmas Bloody Christmas.
Which was great, by the way. Have you not watched it yet? I mean, have you watched it, Faye? You're laughing.
We watched it together.
Oh, my gosh. So I don't know if I've mentioned this to you recently, but my brain is really tired. And I've forgotten when and who I watched that with.
I think you also forgot what that movie was like, so.
I liked it. Leave me alone. I liked it. I enjoyed it.
And it's better than a lot of movies.
It would have been better if it had a story in it.
I mean, the story was what happened in the movie. Story. We won't get into it.
It was literally the Futurama episode, but yeah.
Oh, spoilers. But yeah.
It was a fun movie.
Yeah, I mean, like, as Christmas movies go, it was a Christmas movie.
More or less.
That is true.
See, this is why, this is part of the reason why I like doing the show. Because four people watch this movie and they all have different opinions on it. And that's wonderful. I like that.
Some of them are the wrong opinion, but.
I just like torturing Travis with these movies. So.
No, if you think about it. It's great because that means that there's always going to be somebody, unless it's Valentine, to tell you to, you know, like, you know, that the movie's worth a shot or something like that. So I like that.
It's not as though, and I know we're not reviewing the movie, but it's not as though there was nothing redeeming about Christmas, Bloody Christmas, but they could have, you know, tried to like tell a story in the movie instead of just sort of, hey, a thing happened and the movie's over. Like the little something, I don't know. Cause I did for my show, I did watch a Christmas themed horror movie called Sleigh Bells. And that movie's bonkers and it's silly and it's really dumb and it was made for like $50, but there's at least they're trying to tell a story there. There's a story behind it with Santa Claus and Krampus and all this kind of stuff going on. And it's got Barry Bostwick in it, which is great. But it's just
as Santa.
Well, probably a better movie for Travis then that is also Christmas themed was Violent Night.
Yeah, yes. I haven't seen that yet, but I have heard really good things about it.
Well, one's horror, the other's action.
Well, there's all kinds of movies. Like, look, we watched Christmas Evil. Apparently none of you guys liked that. I thought it was fun. We watched Black Christmas.
Oh, I didn't hate Christmas Evil.
Three of us. Well, you didn't like it, though.
And I didn't, but I'd watch it again over Christmas Bloody Christmas.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, but still, like, it's not even a comparison. It's just like, in general, these are the people who kind of liked the movie and not like the movie. And then Faye didn't like Black Christmas, and the three of us kind of did. And then we watched, like, Bloody Christmas, and I like... You know what? I think the common denominator is I will like more movies. Like, just... I don't need much to like it. I'm easy. I'm an easy grader. So we also watched Prey together, which yep. I think we all agreed was fantastic.
Damn it. Now we all be not covering this movie on the podcast. There we go. Sky Sharks will be the first movie we cover that we all agree is great.
There. We've already agreed one was great.
Yeah. Damn it. The first shark movie, the first Sky movie too, I guess. Whatever. Shut up.
And we're off.
So, yeah, Prey was really great. If you haven't seen Prey, God, I waited way too long to watch that movie. That was...
So yeah, did I.
Such a lovely story. And I heard some like negative comments about it before I went to watch it, which just seeing the comments about being like not right for the Predator series. And I'm just like, you know, you can skew off of what a series is to show something different in the same universe and it'd be good.
I would argue it didn't do that. And the people that are making the comments about how it doesn't work didn't actually pay attention to the first movie.
Yeah.
And they don't
first or second
anything they're fucking talking about.
Yeah.
So
they just don't like that it was, you know, like this coming of age, probably because it was the girl in the front, and
they didn't like that it was a woman protagonist.
Exactly.
It was
a strong woman protagonist.
But I think it's about that time to peek around that corner and give you some highlights of horror news.
Well, we finally had the trailer for the upcoming Evil Dead movie. And in short, that looked awesome.
So Evil Dead Rise, by the way, is the title of the movie. And we got not just the trailer, but the Red Band trailer. There was like an Australian trailer. I think they came
all
like
the trailers.
There were like four different trailers, and they were all just slightly different from each other, like a little bit different footage used. But whoo boy. Taking Evil Dead out of the cabin in the woods and into an apartment in a city. And creepy as hell.
Yeah. Get like all the check boxes of all the creepy shit. Check, 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 check.
The record, the book.
Mm-hmm. Someone crawling out of a bathtub.
Yep. Where did you get this? I found it. Yeah. Oh boy.
That's never good.
No. But yeah, it looked pretty freaking amazing. So
I agreed.
Yeah. I love Evil Dead. I'll watch anything Evil Dead wise.
I have heard some people mentioning Evil Dead as the most consistently good horror franchise.
Yeah.
Amongst its titles. It doesn't even have any titles. Yeah, it
did
doesn't
you
have
like the remake, Faye?
I liked the remake, actually.
I enjoyed it.
Why? Oh, see? And there you go. I'm the one that didn't like it as a remake.
It's not really a remake. It's just a rebranding.
And once again, by the time I watch it again, I may have a different opinion. It's all, you know, I watched it once in, I think I watched it in the theater. And I don't know what I was expecting. I mean, I'm not saying it was like Nightmare on Elm Street remake bad.
What remake? They never made a remake that doesn't exist.
It's kind of what I'm saying is like, there aren't as many installments of the Evil Dead franchise as there are, you know, Friday the 13th or anything like that, but they're all solid. There isn't like a good Lord, this is just a travesty that should never have been made. There's nothing like that I can think of that's an Evil Dead film or even series. Ash versus Evil Dead is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, this is the fifth movie, so.
I see you trying to do the math in your head.
I'm always doing math in my head. That's my life. But I will go on record as saying one and two are basically the same. They're different, yeah. I know, but they're kind of the same movie in a way. It's the
same story.
Basically, yeah. It's basically.
And I end up preferring the, you know, the second one just for reasons of personal liking.
So does Remy.
But not that there's stuff in the first one that I really love, but there's also some stuff I really hate. Like,
that everybody hates. And
so does Remy.
I couldn't look at trees for a couple of years after that first one.
I'll bet they look at you.
But yeah, love Evil Dead.
We also got the drop of Renfield. Nice retelling of Dracula in modern days with good old Nicolas Cage as Dracula.
I'm very interested to see, because I've heard about this for a little while now, and Nicholas Holt as Renfield, and this looks like it's going to be just a shitload of fun.
Double Nicholas's. Also, you get to add it to your month of Cage stuff.
I know. It'll eventually make its way to Cagepalooza for sure.
Like that. That's never going to end, by the way, because he'll just keep making movies.
He will. My favorite part of the trailer, though, my favorite part of it was when you get the knock at the door and it opens up and all you see are the shoes outside the threshold, and the guy running the support group's like, yeah, come on in. And Renfield just reacting with like, no, and then he comes walking in. And I was like, that to me is hilarious. I don't know why that moment killed me. And then you get the reveal of him as Dracula. And I was just like, oh, this is going to be fun.
Yep. Just go watch the trailer and be prepared for awesomeness.
I'm ready for it. I like me some vampires. We'll have to keep our necks covered until that movie releases.
Which brings us to tonight's feature presentation. All packed?
Yep, I'm all ready to get out of here before the sun sets tonight.
Still, I can't believe you're going away for a month.
I'd stay, but an entire month without sunlight is too much, even for me.
Ah, well, I spend my days inside playing games anyway, so it'll be as easy as Dracula preparing a steak.
You vampire, you.
Who told you that?
What?
What?
Keep an eye on things for me, especially with all these night tourists coming in.
Now there's something I can sink my teeth into.
Who comes all the way up here to spend 30 days in the darkness anyways?
Well, folks who spend a lot of money for the experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's not all bad. The town needs some fresh blood every now and then.
Let's just hope they brought their own alcohol. This place is as dry as a vampire's tit.
True. Just make sure they don't burn the place down.
They won't get the chance.
Did you all get Mia and Wicked are vampires?
Yes, Dredd. They get that we're vampires.
30 Days of Night is a 2007 horror film based on the comic book miniseries of the same name. The film was directed by David Slade and stars Josh Hartnett and Melissa George. Now, these aren't Twilight vampires. These are badass vampires. So let's get into the meat of this conversation. So who didn't like this movie?
I like this one.
That wasn't the question.
Ha, you fail. You failed the test.
You fool. Did anybody not like it is where I wanted to start.
No.
Yeah. There we go. Okay. Has everybody seen this before?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I figured we all did. All right. Well, how do you feel about this movie?
Monica.
Dreadly.
It would have been cool if you ended up as yourself.
Well, I'm only pointing to three pictures.
I don't know. I didn't see that. You were doing eeny, miny, mo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about this movie, Dreadly?
I liked it. I had seen this once before, and I'm pretty sure it was in the theater. I haven't seen it since, so it's been a while. All I remembered was obviously vampires or 30 Days of Night. And when rewatching it, I did remember some of the actors. I had completely forgotten Josh Hartnett was in this somehow. I mean, he's only the main character, so, you know, who cares?
But he's not that important to the story or anything.
No, not at all. Not at all. But there's a couple of small things that I didn't like, which will be brought up later. But overall, still a good movie and holds up to this day.
Nice. Travis, how did you feel about this movie?
I like this one. I knew it was based on a comic. I remember seeing it a few years ago. I did not see it in theaters, but I saw it shortly after. And it's funny. It predates the Twilight movie by a year. The first Twilight was 2008. This was 2007. The books had already been out, obviously. I liked that this was a return to your brutal vampires. Vampires had gotten very like romanticized. They go through ebbs and flows of this romanticizing the vampires a lot of times. And this was your just down and dirty, very, very brutal, almost animalistic vampires. But I also like that they're intelligent and there is a plan that they have sort of going on, and there is thought going on from the vampires. They're not just bestial. And the cast, I love the cast. Josh Hartnett, I think, gets a little bit of a bad rep for, I think he's a decent actor. He's not mind-blowing by any stretch, but I thought he was pretty good in this. Danny Houston, I like a lot.
Oh, yeah.
In this. And I remembered that this came out during kind of a period of time where Danny Houston was showing up in a lot of things. Because it was only a couple years after this, he was in... It's a terrible movie, but X-Men Origins, he was William Stryker in that. He had been in a couple movies ahead of this. He had an episode of CSI he was part of. And so he was a face that I had seen quite a bit. Ben Foster is in this. Ben Foster is great.
Ben Foster! Yeah.
Mark Boone Jr., who's one of my favorite character actors that pops up in movies all the time. I had completely forgotten Manu Bennett was in this movie, like at all. And this was before kind of he... got a little bit better known for his part in Arrow as Slade Wilson. And he'd done a couple of other things, but I'd totally forgotten he was in this. Joel Toback, who plays Doug, was like if you wanted, what's his name? I'm blanking on the name, but he reminded me of another actor. Like, he looks like another actor a little bit. Also, it was funny at watching it this time. I realized Melissa George is an Aussie. And it was because of the way she pronounced the word his. There's a line in there where she says, you know, so-and-so, da-da-da, he's something. And I was like, ooh, she's Australian, isn't she? And sure enough, she is. But no, I enjoy this movie for the concept of it's really cool. This idea of the, you know, the town that it's 30 days. Although I think the real Barrow, Alaska, actually gets like 2 months of no sun. Yep. Or something like that. I just enjoy it, and it's decently structured. Maybe gets a little long. It drags in a couple of spots where they could have tightened it up, but this is also the director's second movie. So there's some ability there that he just needed to refine. I like it.
And Faye, how do you feel about the movie?
It's fun. As everybody else has said, it's a return to brutal vampires. I like to call them zombie vampires because of the way that their infection spreads.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Even a scratch can do it. A scratch turns them. So, yeah. overall, I actually enjoy it. And, a lot of the vampires survived and ran away. So, where's our sequel?
There is a sequel.
There's like three sequels, I think.
Three sequels?
Series.
No, I saw there was one sequel, and there was a mini series before this or during the same time ish.
Like a show? I thought the comic book was a mini series comic.
Well, the concept came about, and it was originally pitched as a movie, and nobody bought it. So then they made the comic out of it, and IDW picked it up and published it. And then it got made into a movie, and they made a sequel called 30 Days of Night, Dark Days. And here, just listen to this real quick for the synopsis, because this movie has a IMDb rating is 4.3 on this one.
And it's, ouch.
After surviving the incidents in Barrow, Alaska, Stella Olson relocates to Los Angeles, where she attracts the attention of local vampire population in order to avenge the death of her husband, Eben. Sorry, but it sounds horrible.
I'm especially surprised that it's 30 days dark in LA.
Yeah. She relocates to Los Angeles because they couldn't afford to shoot anywhere else. Sounds kind of dumb. And none of the actors return.
Yeah.
There's basically nobody involved in that movie that was at all any part of the first movie.
Okay, let me rephrase this. A good sequel.
Aw. Well, you can't always get what you want.
But if you try sometimes.
Yeah. So I like this movie. Yes. I like... I like sexy vampires. I enjoy True Blood. I don't really care for like the Twilight-y ones. And, you know, like there's some part of that I like. But I love these like visceral, like crazy big-eyed rancid-looking teeth. Like I don't want those anywhere near me. But, yeah, I love it. I love the high energy and the gore, and I like the backdrop of, being in snowy, isolated town. I mean, like, that hits my thing of, like, space and deep sea.
Yep.
Because it's, like, what do they say, 180 miles or something, to whatever?
80 miles of roadless wilderness.
And it's cold. It's not like you can even, you know, it's not even like you can go through the forest. Like, right. You need supplies and stuff for that coldness.
And yet the one guy was able to walk there.
Yeah, he was bundled up.
Yeah, you just wear like a warm jacket, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I also like the more kind of animalistic, because vampires are a monster, and I like when they embrace the monster side of that. It's fun to view that. It doesn't have to be the only version of vampires that you see. I like that there are varying styles of vampire, just like there's varying styles of zombie and everything. But there's something about the I think visceral is the word you use that I really like for the type of vampire that this is, where like Danny Houston's character, who is actually has a name, his character's name is Marlowe, but no one says it. But he spends almost the entire movie with like, you know, blood on his face from one of his kills, and he just leaves it there. Like they just leave that. They don't care about that. And he's got the big, long, gross looking fang or claw fingernails going
on.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Those teeth are awful. And they developed their own linguistics for this movie so that they spoke a language that was unique to this movie. The vampires did. And I liked that he spoke that, and he's really the only one that did. And there's this whole, like, there's some world building that goes on with the way these vampires are that makes you ask questions, and they don't answer any of them, but they kind of dangle little bits around you. Like, he's speaking a language that just nobody speaks. So how old is he? Do they live forever? Because the one guy, Carter, it's at one point, it's like, I don't want to live for, like, nobody knows actually about vampires. There's the line he gives about, let's make them, they used to, or we spent centuries making them believe it was a nightmare and not real. Let's, you know, we can't let them know now, kind of thing. Like, it's all really cool kind of ideas and seeds at play that I really enjoyed.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they could be like those vampires that just live really long, but they still get old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't really know. Like, why were a couple of them, their faces looked almost alien. And yet some of the other ones didn't. Like, the eyes would get distorted and slanted, and their cheekbones were super pronounced and high. Yeah. And like, their face was distorted a little bit. But then you had others that are just like, that their eyes are just black. And so, like, is that a thing that happens over time? Like, we don't know, but mm-hmm. it's sort of like when I was complaining about Christmas, Bloody Christmas, not really giving us any story by not telling us anything. This is a way for a movie to not have to tell you things, but have some story woven into what they're doing. There's story there that they just, you have to find out, as opposed to it just being like, there's a thing and we don't care. There, you can tell there's care going on for something underneath what you're seeing on screen.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, it's hard to quantify that. It's hard to put that to words, how that can work in one instance and not in another. But like, at the same time, you sort of can feel it. I feel like, in a lot of ways. So I don't know. I just liked it.
Has anyone here read the comic before?
Nope.
No.
No, I do know there's a few differences to it from this, and obviously, you're condensing a story when you tell it in a movie like this.
But it'd be interesting to read like the source material and whatnot and see what the differences are. That would be something cool. Hey, yeah, maybe someday if we get the chance to read it, we can like talk about the comic itself. Between having to cover the second movie.
Look, there's plenty of other movies we can cover. We don't have to. But there was little things in this movie that for me worked. Like, there's a scene early on where Eben and Billy ride up, and they he gives the citation to Mark Boone Jr. with his big snowplow truck.
Oh yeah. Thing.
And like, it's a pointless scene in a lot of ways, but it gives you a little bit of backstory on a couple of the characters from the one line where he's like, he lives out on the ridge all by himself. Give him a citation every once in a while, helps him to remember he's part of this community. Like, that right there gives you a lot of information about Eben as a character and about Bo as a character. And there you go. You get a lot from that short little interaction. So I love stuff like that. That, and they did some really good action in this when he drives that trencher through town with the like 14-foot chainsaw on the front of it.
Best scene.
Yes. Absolutely that great.
That and the grinder tool when they showed that off at the start. It was like, oh, someone's going through that.
Yeah, check the grinder. Yeah. No, you don't.
Oh my god. Can they make that grinder? Chekhov's grinder? I'd like to, that'd be the dating app for me, I think.
I mean, you don't show a device like that and in a horror movie and you know somebody's going into it. It's gonna happen.
I think I think it was more the dude getting his arm caught in it that really like freaked me out. Like, it's one thing to go through it and you're dead really fast, but to have your arm, like, oh, he was messed up, and there's, like, little bones sticking out of there.
Well, and, I mean, that guy, that, so the character of Billy, I wanted more Billy on screen, and it sort of felt like they forgot about him for, like, two-thirds of the movie.
Well, I did.
Because he's at the beginning of the movie. He seems like he's going to be an important part. And then he's just sort of not around. And then when we do come back to him, it's a gut-wrenching, heartbreaking scene that should have – it's heartbreaking, but it should have had so much more impact. That is a problem I had with that scene is like because we just sort of forgot about Billy for 45 minutes to an hour. To just come back to him and have that, that doesn't feel like they earned having that reveal with that character because they literally, like, where was he? They didn't even try to get a hold of him at all. And so, but at the same time, it's still just a horrendously awful thing to have to go through and to have that scene there. And I get what they were going for. And they wanted to have, you know, it's the whole thing with Josh Hartnett, with Eben and like family. Right, you protect family, you don't hurt family.
That was so sad. Yeah, it was, and it's funny, like you say that they didn't earn it, but also it's like this thing that happened to the other guy, but we're watching it affect the main character who we actually care about, who we've seen more of the movie. So it's almost like using him as some weird device, which is almost.
They also had to do it like that because. Okay, they can have him in the movie more, but then what? Either he spends the most part of the movie with the other characters, but then you don't have the interaction with his wife and kids, or they kind of jump in between and show the wife and kids and him, and then the impact of it won't be as shocking.
I think if I had gotten to know the kids and the wife more, I
know Biggie.
Would have hurt me a lot more than it did because I was just kind of like,
well, that sucks. Exactly. So like, it doesn't even have to be that he's in the movie a lot or we cut to them during things, but something else. Like we met Billy at the beginning. We get that Billy is, you know, he's friends with Eben. They work together. Eben sends him to go pick up Stella when she gets stranded. He kind of takes his time getting there, sort of manufactures a way to keep her in town for the month, right? So that her and Eben can work their shit out or whatever it is. But what we needed something with him coming home and meeting his family. Even if it's just a brief scene where we see his wife and kids and we see Stella there and then Stella's like, all right, I'm going to go, you know, whatever. And then we write a reason for her to end up where she did, but we don't get any of that. So you kind of don't even realize that he has kids until the scene where you see them, you see the bed. And it's just like, it's terrible, but there are ways to do it that's even more effective, I think. But again, I'm kind of nitpicking in a lot of ways with that because it's still effective. It's just, could have been because we just sort of forgot about him. And it's an actor that I really like. I like Manu Bennett, and I think that what we saw of him on screen was pretty cool. But it's sort of, they did the same thing with Ben Foster in The Stranger. Like, The Stranger is there, and then all of a sudden they're just like, eh, all right, we're done with that character. We'll just move on. He doesn't need to be in the movie anymore.
Well, I mean, he loses his head.
Or he does.
Characters are interesting, but you know what it's time for?
The 13!
The 13 is a specially cultivated list of tropes or our favorite things from horror movies. This list may change or be adjusted as time goes on and in real time, because this is real life. And 30 days goes by pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. Number one, kitty cat.
No.
No.
Nope.
Unfortunate pups.
Yeah.
At least they didn't show everything.
Yeah. I mean,
they showed enough, but
by that you mean they didn't show a knife going into fur.
Yes. Oh my god.
Anything else?
Number two. So,
why I didn't feel bad when Ben Foster's character got his head torn off, because he stabbed a bunch of dogs. You fucking die.
Number two, Volkswagen.
No.
No.
Volkswagen wouldn't survive up in Barrow, Alaska.
No. But they did have that cool, you know, the thing with the thing that Faye was talking about. What is that called again?
The where trencher?
He was cutting people up with the thingy.
Yeah, it was the,
that was cool.
The trencher. They had a bunch of big old trucks.
Now that's a cool title for a movie. The trencher.
I bet you that's a movie.
Probably.
Look it up! Number three. Scary location, time of the year.
Ding, 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 ding.
Middle of nowhere. Snowed in. Literally the time of the year when there's no sun.
Yeah.
In that area.
No daylight for a month or two.
Yeah. That is I do find that interesting. Cause I am very much a night person. I like the nightlife. I like to boogie. And
I think most of us are that way.
Mm-hmm. You mean most of us on the show?
Yes.
Yeah. Probably. But I'd be interested in someday, like, going somewhere like that. I mean, as long as, you know, there are no vampires. Which, by the way, I just want to point out that when I was, like, researching and Googling stuff, one of the questions asked about this movie is this based on a true story?
There's always somebody
asking. The answer is yes. Yes, it is.
The thing... The thing with being somewhere that is night for that long without sunlight is it messes with your head. It messes with your rhythms. Mythbusters did an entire episode about that. They spent, I don't think they spent 30 days. I think they went 2 weeks. But they were in Alaska in a cabin, and there was no daylight for the entire time they were there. And it's not easy to go through, because you can't really get a rhythm of when to sleep and when not to, because you have no signposting, especially, I think their thing was too, they really tried to, I don't think they had a clock in the cabin either.
Oh,
but like it just, it's not, you know, it's very abnormal for humans to be in that kind of a situation. So it might be interesting to check out, but also I feel like it'd be really unsettling. And I think the same thing would be true if you were up there in the summertime when it got no night for 2 months and it was just the sun was out all the time.
So. I would not ever want that.
That would be my nightmare.
Yeah, that would be terrible.
Yeah.
But
I could deal with the night.
I wouldn't want to move there. I would not want to move there, but... It would be be interesting. I don't know. I think I'd prefer to go somewhere warmer. Because that's cold as hell. We said 80 miles to the nearest thing. And that yeah, is...
The separation from everything, the seclusion, that's the real killer.
Yeah.
Well, like, in reality, you would still have the airplane going in and out, and they wouldn't close the airport like in the movie.
Yeah, like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. There's no way that 30 days they didn't have airplanes.
Yeah, there'd be no reason to close an airport for 30 days because they'd have to get supplies in and out.
Yeah. Also, like, it's just night. They still fly planes at night. It's not like it's some weird emergency or something.
Like, closing it down for a storm? Sure. That makes sense. You know, there's a storm coming. We're going to be closed for the next day or two. But they wouldn't close the airport for 30 straight days.
No. That, well, they worked kind of that with the destruction of all of the flight, the helicopter, the helmet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then they took, yeah, they did, he destroyed all the rest of the ways that they could get anywhere.
Destructions of the cell phone.
Yeah, all the cell phones, the cell tower.
Well, I mean, you had to take that away, right? Because, you know.
Which I thought was a nice touch that they had, like, the town had its own cell tower and somebody manning the cell tower. And there was a point to make that they did that. Like, you know, that's a good bit of, again, good bit of storytelling. So you can't just be like, oh, they just don't have signal up there. No, they don't have signal up there because they literally destroyed the fucking tower. Like,
yeah. Modern times. I just. Yeah, I couldn't be around that seclusion. Number four. Meta humor, fourth wall breaks, mentioning the title. Well, they sort of mention the title. Ish.
Not yeah, but really, there's not a whole lot of humor in this movie.
No humor. No humor here either. Okay. Good to know.
Oh, we're a serious crowd.
Completely serious.
Number five, archetype characters. Crazy Ralph from Friday the 13th. Randy from Scream. Dick Halloran from The Shining.
I mean,
you well, we have the old guy that is not kind of there. So he has to go out and go
old man get Kinsa. His wife.
Okay, so here was a nice. Here's the thing that I will give them credit for in this, is he has dementia, and so him freaking out and acting the way that he does doesn't feel like it's a forced. Like, why would this character suddenly act like a complete nut job? Well, no, in this case, that dude literally has no idea what's going on. Or why he's there. He's trying. He doesn't even know that his wife is dead. So, like, that was that's an intelligently written in way to get that sort of create that scenario in a way that actually feels realistic. Mm-hmm. So I give them credit for that.
He's a slippery little bastard too.
Yeah. And old people, when they want to move, man, they can.
But he is the device by which you know.
Yeah.
Causes the ruckus, basically.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But at least it's done, again, in a way that, you know, works intelligently.
I'm still going to call him Old Man Kinsa.
Bo, the character of Bo is sort of the, like, the outsider loner that ends up, you know, stepping up and helping out and, like, taking one for the team type guy. That's definitely a tropey character that you see in a lot of these kind of movies. Mm-hmm. And I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it was Mark Boone Jr. and that guy's awesome.
The couple who are broken up but still in love bullshit thing. Mm-hmm. Oh my god. Oh, yeah.
And we don't know exactly what happened. They just were split up and they never talk about it in the movie.
Yeah.
Because it would take too long.
Well, they had 30 days.
Too long the list.
And they put that on an extra edge of a peak by making Josh Hartnett's character the self-sacrificing hero, basically. You know,
pretty much.
It's like it doesn't matter what they were fighting about. He's also crispy.
Also, you had the guy And it was Joel Tobeck's character, who Michael Shannon is who I was thinking of. He reminded me of Michael Shannon. Like, look at that character, look at that actor, and tell me he doesn't look like a Xeroxed copy of a Xeroxed copy of Michael Shannon. But he was the one who's like making the dumb decisions of, oh, we need to move now. Oh, some people might die, but we'll be okay. Like the kind of selfish asshole.
Yeah.
He was that guy.
Definitely. Luckily, nobody was really listening to him, but they had that weird silent fight that was just interesting.
You want to fight? You're going to kill us now by doing it.
Yeah, like, shut the hell up. The little girl being like the bait.
Oh, yeah. Them out. Eight characters. There's a couple of those.
And of course, the guy that helps the vampires, because they're going to turn him into one, which they never do.
Ben Foster. He is the tropity trope. Actually, the, what do you call it?
I mean, he's kind of the Renfield to this, to Marlowe's Dracula.
There you go, with the big words.
That's great. Names.
And I love that we talked about the movie, and now here's the actual using the word in context.
Don't forget the child vampire.
Oh God.
Gotta have a creepy child.
That was horrible. Yeah.
Okay.
Children always.
So again, gonna nitpick a little bit here, but did that feel to anyone else like they just put that in there to have, like, we gotta tick the box of the creepy child vampire character trope?
Yeah.
Of course.
And so I'm just going to put that in there.
And but I thought it was done pretty decent.
Oh, it was fine, but it's like, okay, what that felt like to me was, we're going to put this scene in the movie so we can use it in the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what that felt like to me. Fine, but let's call it what it is. It was trailer bait.
Yeah. The bad seed whole thing.
Oh boy, was that it ended in quite the brutal way.
Yeah.
And how it was handled after that ending, I enjoyed with the boy getting, you know, coddled because he just had to perform a traumatic action.
Oh, that relationship
was beautiful.
Josh Hartnett, Eben, and his little brother was a great, I loved that relationship in the movie.
Also, his little brother was way better handling an axe or a hatchet than him.
That is true.
Whenever he had to cut off a head, he had to, you know, 3, 4 times.
Well, small child versus adult. You know, the neck is a little bit bigger.
She had a tiny little neck to get through, and she was already pinned against a wall.
But yeah. I feel like Eben had a little much too much fun doing it slowly. But just
we mentioned the head vamp, but also once he's dead, apparently
they're just all like, no, fuck off then, we're leaving.
Scurry. Which is convenient.
Cut off the head, the body dies, right? Get rid of the head vampire, and the rest of them were like, well, it's been fun, but we gotta be hitting the old dusty trail now.
Yes, we gotta get back on our ship.
We have a sequel to make.
Should we go after them?
Well, and here's the thing, too. Okay, so you talk about their, you know, wanting a sequel to this. Are there more than this little, like, group of vampires? Because those vampires had 80 miles of roadless wilderness they had to travel, and the sun was coming up. They're all French fried. There's nothing for them. Where are they going to go hide in one of the buildings and then burn to death?
Yeah, we don't know how fast they run or whatnot, but you got to imagine some of them did not make it.
They're not running 80 miles between when they said the sun is coming up and the sun came up.
They turned into bats? We don't know. We don't know
anything.
They're not
80 miles from that ship from the beginning, right? It was closer.
We don't know. They never give us a distance.
We don't really know. So it took them a couple days to get from the ship into town.
Hmm.
Mm.
All I'm saying is that none of those vampires survived, is my theory, that they all burnt to a crisp just outside of town.
Well, we can all hope.
Wandering and leaderless.
Number 6. Pointless boobies, weird wangs, moonies. No.
No nudity. Pretty. Lots of violence. No nudity.
Super, super violence.
There was probably a moon. You know, you had 30 days of.
No dumb, like forced sex scene thrown in there. There's a romance in the movie, but like.
Yeah, it'd be hard to throw a sex scene in there if you think like because they were cooped up together for a while.
If this movie had been made in 1987, they'd have found a way to do it, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There'd have been one. It would have made no sense. But they'd have done that and tried to keep quiet so that the vampires didn't hear them having sex.
Or just have a sex scene between the main vampire and his girl.
That too. Yeah, like, could have been. But like, they would have.
Here's the other.
In a way.
Can I just point out the other obvious thing about the. They couldn't shower for 30 days and they were pooping.
Yeah, they were definitely. Smelling bad by about
which is also weird that the vampires didn't smell them.
Yeah, and not just them, but the women, because 30 days.
Passage of time was weird in the movie, though. Let's yes. be honest. Like,
yes. Yes.
Jump.
A scene, and they're like,
jump.
Well, they would have a scene, and like Josh Hartnett, you know, Eben would be like, all right, so what we'll do is we'll make a run for the general store, and then we'll go to here, and that's what we're going to do, and then it cut, and then day 7. And they're still in the same place. It's like, yeah. Well, wait a minute. You've had 6 days to go. Why are you still in the same place? Like, and then day 27. Like, all right, we just skipped a couple weeks. Like, and the vampires were just like,
yeah,
they're fine. We'll get to them later. We got, we got darkness for another month.
Yeah. It felt like between those jumps, the vampires were just like sitting there. And what are we doing? I don't know. We wait. We got confused. Oh, God. Okay.
I mean, there think were 152 people. They had to get through with
started
five
out
left.
With a, mm-hmm. Started with 152 and ended with 5
mm-hmm.
or so.
So there's the kill count, by the way. Do math. 147. Yeah.
She was doing the math.
No. No, I couldn't remember if I was going to say something. I don't need to say anything. It's fine. I'm going to go. Number 7, retelling the legend and or establishing the movie's rules, breaking Randy's rules, vamp rules.
Aww. Yeah, the only rule was to take off their head. They can't be turned.
Yeah, it was interesting because there wasn't like this was a vampire movie that didn't do the vampire movie thing of explaining to you how vampires can be killed in mm-hmm. the first 30 minutes of the movie.
So you had to figure it out.
And they made like references to vampires, but you know, they like the creatures never called themselves that. They did talk about turning them. And I thought that was, again, that was kind of a cool line of dialogue where he said exactly that. Don't turn them. Remove the head from the body. Like, we don't want to be making more. We got too many mouths to feed as it is. We can't be making baby vampires.
Well, maybe they could feed some more mouths if they didn't waste so much blood.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
The most, clean and or efficient vampires, were they?
Yeah.
It was like... Like, they killed someone and just let the blood drain. I'm like, what?
Especially, they just get there. They have 30 days to get through. So you think like, oh, they're taking their time to stock up on, you know, bodies or food. And then they just kill. And there's blood everywhere. And you're like, what?
I will tell you what they didn't have. They didn't have my mother telling them that if they didn't finish their plate, they weren't going anywhere. Like, it's just like, this is your food. Stop playing with it. Eat it.
You will not leave that body until you have drained it of all the blood.
Yeah. I figured they would, you know, round up people. But no. Just
keep
no
pens.
And but that adds to the whole reckless thing. Like, if you've seen, I can't remember what movie it was. I think it might have been a Blade movie, or who remembers? But like, there were vampires that were like keeping humans so that they could drain the blood, but keeping them alive. And I'm like, that's ingenious. That way, you're not really killing them, but you know, you're destroying an entire town of people. You're not even like using all the blood. You're like just, and you're just being reckless. You're just having fun. And so like that also brings another aspect to it of why it's so scary, kind of like,
yeah, because there aren't rules. Like these vampires don't follow the established order of vampires that we know as horror movie fans. And also, again, there's the line where he talks about we spent centuries making them think, you know, having them believe it was that it was nightmares. So it's like they don't keep things around because they just slaughter everyone and move on. And yeah, it's very different. And a more unique take on vampires than we've seen in a lot of other things, especially at the time, you know, 2007. I think the comic was a couple of years earlier. I want to say like 2000, like 3 to 5, somewhere around there. I believe. I'm not positive on that, but
yeah. I definitely have to sink my teeth into that comic. Number 8, dance sequence, montage sequence. I feel like part of the movie was a montage sequence, but a very slow moving montage sequence.
Yeah, it was basically vampires wrecking shit. I did love
the overhead. Having fun doing it.
That overhead tracking shot of the town, where we're just slow, like the helicopter shot, and you're just seeing vampires and people shooting at the vampires, and like people getting bled out in the street and cars exploding and all that. Like, that was just cool. Like, I really thought that was neat. The way that they stage that.
It's like an RTS.
Kind of. No dancing, but montage.
Unfortunately.
I would have liked a little dance sequence with some of the vampires.
Yeah.
During days, like from day 8 to day 26, where they're bored.
Yeah.
That's probably what they were doing. They had a dance. Yeah.
I mean, we assume they sleep, right? No, maybe.
I don't know.
I feel like they had to for as much time as they didn't spend just tearing apart all the houses looking for the people.
I'm just thinking,
they probably, you know,
like the high school gym doing some line dancing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Of course.
Like, they probably could have just done it in a couple of nights instead of, oh, we have 30 days of nights. We need to spend 30 days of this movie.
Number 9, someone does stupid shit, or that scared the shit out of me, whichever applies, or your favorite trope.
Well, first of all, where were the vampires all this time? That was pretty stupid of them to, like, in day 1 or 2 or whatever in the beginning, they're like, oh no, they're next doors, they're ransacking the houses, they're going to find us, and then you just skip days ahead and... apparently they gave up. I don't know.
Well, they were in the attic, the well-hidden attic ladder. Nobody's going to look up.
Was not really hidden, I found, but whatever. Also, that house was supposed to be boarded up because they had to, you know, remove the board to get in. And then later they just leave the house and there's no boards anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of inconsistency there, just a touch. You know, there's the trope of the guy hears something outside, the one that was manning the cell tower, and he goes outside to look for it, and he just keeps wandering further and further away. You know, look, bud, nothing good happens in the middle of the night during a snowstorm outside when you're isolated like that. Just stay inside and wait it out.
Same with the three people from the oil thing. It was the oil thing. I don't know where they were working. at the one woman with the two guys that were, which apartment are we going to?
Yeah, let's rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, you have one dude just disappearing in front of you. So you're just going to be like, you okay? I'll go.
Where'd you go?
Yeah, what? no, you run.
She tried.
I mean, well, she got away. She ended up making it through the whole movie.
True.
But
I like the really big dark eyes thing. That proving that they're extra, extra super evil.
Oh, yeah. All black eyes.
I like that. I like anytime people wear some sort of like eye thing because it always makes like such a big statement.
That's why you like pirate movies, right?
We did mention earlier the old man and that the trope of like somebody, you know, something's got to incite. And basically, if he doesn't do that, they wait out the whole 30 days in that attic because obviously the vampires aren't going to find him. Like they just
somehow
weren't going to.
Yeah.
But they needed something to get them out there. And so I just want to point out how much I appreciated that they had the man with dementia cause it and then his son be the dumb one that also
yell.
But I also can understand it because family makes you do stupid shit. Right. And his father has now wandered out into whatever the hell is going on. And this guy's like, he's not thinking anymore. He's just going out to find his dad.
Yeah.
So
it is a truth universally known. I mean, that's why, you know, most of the people did the things that they did. Self-sacrificing, what's his beak, and except for that sad, I don't even want to think about the dude and his family. That's just too sad. Like the rest of the movie, like it's all got this like slightly hopeless feeling to it. But at the same time, that's part of what's good about it. I don't know how to explain it. Like you just feel like shit. There's no way I'd get out of this situation, but it's fun, you know, because it's not actually happening to me. Thank God. Because I wouldn't.
And trope-wise, I would say the whole, vampires, they must not like UV light. Oh, good, there's one in town. Oh, look, it's working. Oh, but we don't have the electricity or power for it. Oh, well.
Well, but that's the thing, is the vampires and Ben Foster, they shut the power down to the whole town. And
then destroyed the generator after it getting one use.
Yeah, he figured it out, and they did that. That whole thing was done just as a distraction. So it was never meant to be like the end game to take them all out with the UV light. It was more of just like, hey, UV light is going to do it. Because I even liked how they were like, yeah, no, this, what was it? Even says, because she tells him, you don't think this plan's going to work. And he goes, no, but you do. And he's willing to go through with it to help save everybody else.
It ain't Bela Lugosi.
Yep, that was a nice name drop, too. I like that.
Did anybody else... Go ahead, finish.
I just like that they kept referencing all the different vampire stuff without saying... They're vampires, other than his brother.
Like, it's kind of like the zombie thing. You know, that while where, like, they would, everything they did, they didn't want to mention zombie.
Don't say that. Say what? The Z word.
Yeah. Don't say that. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's like when they're trying to do something different, and they just... They use the old word. Then did anyone else laugh when Ben Foster's like, I don't talk to dead men, but yet, like vampire, like technically kind of dead.
He was both amazing and criminally underused.
Oh, yeah. I was upset. I forgot what happened in the movie. So I thought he was really going to change him. And I'm like, that's the whole thing. Like, he doesn't want to just make any random people into vampires. But like this one who's proved himself, maybe that's how he collects followers or something. And then I'm like, see, he's going to crack. Oh,
never mind.
The things they believe.
I would have loved to see him as a vampire. Like, he deserved it.
But he was a very, it's a tropey character, but it's a interesting character. And he dies into those things so much. And it's just a bummer that, you know, he has essentially one scene in the diner and then he's in the jail cell. Yeah, and that's basically it. But, you know.
He just wanted some fresh meat.
Wrong.
Oh, did you hear the Wilhelm scream?
Yeah, and I also heard the Psycho scream.
The Is it the... Yeah. The did I not say that, Dreadly? I was like, Wilhelm! Lady Wilhelm! I love it. I'm sorry. I think I'm one of the rare people that likes that.
I just giggle at it.
Yeah. It's funny. Number 10. Solitude shots. Well, this environment is very...
ripe?
Sure. Yeah, that's a good word.
The entire opening of the movie with Ben Foster walking into the town.
That scene with the ship in the background and stuff too. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that. Just that is so solitude. Like, how the hell did you even get off the ship, by the way?
There was a little boat, a rowboat.
There was up against the dock. I missed the little boat. I thought he just swam. I guess that would be too cold.
He wouldn't survive if he had swam.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, I wasn't thinking about it. But it's really beautiful.
But yeah, no, there is a little rowboat next to a dock that he kind of looks down at, but it is a blink and you miss it. I just watched it again this morning.
But it's still a beautiful shot, and there's just something about like the bigness of the boat, the largeness. You know what? I'm going to stop talking.
And it just reminded me of the Borealis.
Yes. Also, because we have kind of like a story where it's like a murder. It's like the way murder mystery would happen in a house with a certain amount of people. And they're all being like picked off one at a time. But like not in a slow way. I just mean like the numbers are dwindling. And that's just the movie's making the people. Solitude-y. I just made up a word. It's fine. But yeah, I don't want to be in Alaska in the middle of nowhere by myself.
It's okay. You'll have a lot of vampires to help you.
That's true. You know, at least I won't be alone. Number 11. Scary score, spooky soundtrack. I don't remember anything.
Yeah, no, this wasn't one that had a memorable score to it at all.
It had a score that fit the scene, but it wasn't overly memorable.
Yeah.
No.
Which probably means it was fine.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. Nothing against you, composer. I'm sure you're lovely. Number 12, Final Girl? No.
Not in the way that you would think of as a final girl.
Yeah, no. I mean, there are girls left. But the survivors are...
Stella, the little girl, the younger woman, the older woman, and Jake.
Yeah. So, it's mostly the women that... Well, yeah. Guess they killed all the guys. Well, yeah. So, no. Number 13, the Savini Scale of Gore. It's not the quantity of gore, it's the quality of gore. Special effects and monsters. So how many axes to the throat?
I mean, there were hatchets, so, you know.
No, that was an axe.
Mm-hmm.
It's a joke. It's a joke.
It's a joke. I'm going to give it a 7. I thought it was, I don't know, really, like we said earlier, brutal, visceral, lots of blood wasted all over the place. I just had fun, so I gave it a 7.
For me, it'd be a 6. It's just something about the CG, especially with the eyes. It just didn't look right. But that's me.
Yeah, that part, yeah, I could see that.
It's just, the CG did not last
age well.
Yeah,
it is, you know.
But it is from that era.
At least it's not like the late 90s. Early 2000s. Anything.
I mean, honestly, that's my only real complaint about it is the CG not standing the test of time. So, I mean, I guess it's not that bad.
See, because I'm going in a different direction and I'm giving it an 8. Because they were consistent throughout the movie. There was no point where you're like, oh, that's, they definitely didn't have the money to finish that effect. The practical effects looked good. I liked the design of the vampires with the crazy teeth, the blood all over them. The couple of the kills were really brutal and really well done. With chopping of heads and really, I mean, the only Billy was the only one where it's like, that's obviously a prosthetic that's being chopped up. And even then it still looked really good. So
yep,
I'm going to an 8 for it.
Yeah. The bone sticking out of the arm that
looked really good.
Yep. I was also going to give again 8 for the exact same reasons.
Of course the men stick together.
Look, if you're going to chop off a head real slowly, then it looks nice when it's going sideways slowly. I like that. I appreciate that. Also, the kills with the treasure looked good to me.
Yeah, the whole trencher scene was great.
Especially because they were quick, so you didn't have time to see the bad CGI. So it was good CGI.
You mean the one that got cut in half from his crotch?
Yep.
Upwards.
Over.
I mean that whole scene was badass. Sorry. I was like, yes, get him, take him out. He took out quite a few of them.
Well, he did blow up the things a little bit too quickly, I have found, because there were still way too many vampires out of range of the explosion. That's how he survived the explosion as well. That was
weird. Another one was, the logic brain was like, no, dude died in that explosion because he was standing right over top of it. Like, the shockwave alone is enough to stop his heart. He's not alive after that to then have the head crush, but whatever.
And the line, I forget the exact wording, but it was...
Oh, it was great. When he comes up against something he can't destroy, he destroys himself.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just like, no, he destroyed quite a few of you fuckers.
Not really, though, because they just kind of came pouring out of there on fire.
Yep. They just were
like, with the trencher and the shotgun. I mean, he took off heads left and right with it.
Their heads popped quickly, by the way. They were easy to pop.
That was just such a hard scene to watch because, like, you saw him go in there and he's like, you're not going to eat me, and then, like, blow up. And I was like, yeah. And then, you know, he gets pulled out of it.
He didn't even have any scorch marks either.
Yeah, he looked good for someone almost blown up.
Good for somebody standing over top of dynamite when it exploded. Like, surprisingly.
You sure they were dynamite? I thought they were just flares.
Either way, whatever they were, if it was just a box of flares, that's fine. Like, he looked really good for somebody who'd just been through
that. Yeah.
None of his hair was singed. His beard was gone.
But you know what? He was right, because they didn't eat him.
It's true.
No, they just crushed his head. Eat
anyone?
Yeah.
Because I feel like they just killed everyone.
Yeah. So, like, why drink their blood?
I do have, so again, kind of, you know, getting a little nitpicky and getting some of the things that didn't work great was we had too many of the pull at your heartstrings, really, like, emotional moments. Right, because you're supposed to have the emotional moment with him in that scene because it's a self-sacrifice. We talked about the scene with Billy and his family and how what they were going for and that they didn't quite execute it. And then there's the scene with Carter where he reveals that the little girl scratched him or bit him or whatever it was and he got infected and he's starting to turn and he doesn't want to because of the whole thing with his family and how – because there's the scene at the beginning – where Eben's talking to Carter about when's the family coming back. So, like, none of them know that this guy's family was all killed by a drunk driver. And then you have this big emotional scene where he's – so it's like they went to that emotional well too many times in the movie, I feel like. Because that scene by itself should have been the pivotal emotional moment in it. Because then you have the whole thing where they – the two of them go off into that room and, you know, here's – Stella on the ground, like covering her ears because she doesn't want to hear what's happening in the other room. And you know what's going on and you don't see any of it. And then it's not that long after that, we have the scene where they see Billy's still alive and we go find him and he has shot his entire family and then the gun jammed.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, all right. We can only take so much emotional damage in this movie. And that's where, when I kind of talked earlier about how it sort of drags in parts, like, we just had that scene with Carter. We don't then need to try and recreate and do the same sort of story beat again because it just sort of drags it out.
I never should have signaled you.
You ain't wrong there.
Dreadly, perhaps you have some trivia this week?
Aw, yes. So as Travis mentioned earlier, if you are going to be without sunlight for an entire month, that's going to have an effect on your psyche and mood and sleeping habits and all that. But what this movie also taught us is it also affects your beard grow, apparently. Because apparently only the main character grows a little beard to show passage of time, and all the rest, no, they just stay the same.
The old man did. He was clean shaven when they first went into that attic, and he had a beard when he wandered away.
Yeah, but he has dementia, so that doesn't count.
Oh, okay.
That doesn't count?
Yeah, that also grows your beard. That's like the exception to the rule. Yeah. But all the others had the same beard from the beginning to the end.
That's true. I guess Billy's was maybe a little bit longer, but even then, not enough for it to really matter because he had kind of full beard going.
Of course, the only person that gets to grow the beard is the one person that
can't
really get one. It was like, gee, aww.
I did like that the snow was mostly salt. Because they built that town. That was all soundstage stuff.
Yep.
And it was mostly salt for to stand in for snow. Which makes sense.
I never remember to say stuff like this, but this had one of those opening logo thingies that was really cool.
Oh, I love that. The Columbia logo?
Mm-hmm.
Where you see the Columbia logo and then it turns into that dark. Also, most of the night stuff was shot day for night. I did read that, which I thought was interesting.
It's amazing what they can do on film. Like, it wasn't even cold there. There was no snow.
Yeah.
Just they were in a sound stage.
Yeah. And they had oil that you can explode with a match, as you do in movies.
And that will wrap up the 13 for this episode. So remember that body count was 152 minus 5, which is 147 people and several vampires, if not all of them, with Travis's theory.
Some more brutal than others. Man, Danny Houston's character goes, "Oof, oof." That was a rough one. Punched through the skull.
That was pretty cool. I was kind of hoping that Josh Hartnett would become their leader, but he did not.
They hesitated for a moment. They were like, maybe, maybe.
Daddy? No? Okay. And now we'll play What the Hell Was That? It's where we play a clip from our next movie provided by our clip curator, Dreadly. Play the clip, Dreadly.
Hell no. I wonder who sent this. Jake? Roses are red, violets are blue. One is dead, and so are you.
Can you guess that movie? Give it a try on Twitter, and don't forget to tag the show. And if no one guesses it, we'll still post our gift clues. So be sure to follow us at Gore Podcast. First person to guess it correctly gets a shout out on the next episode, and you can be like Squatch, who guessed Friday the 13th Part 2 correctly. Yay! We didn't get any emails this week, but we like emails. And you can send us an email at gorepodcast13@gmail.com. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, go to patreon.com/gore13. And if you'd like to support us in some non-monetary ways, feel free to leave a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice. I mean, you can leave any number of stars, but, you know, I don't know. Just give us 5, damn it.
5 is a good number.
It's the magic. Oh, wait, that's 3. But until next episode, where can people find you, Travis?
I am on all of the social medias as TV's Travis. Most active on Twitter and also TV'sTravis.com, which is in the midst of a redesign and should be relaunching soon.
Oh, I was going to say you stopped mentioning your website. And I was like, updates. Faye, where can people find you?
On Twitter at Chibi Faye Lin.
And finally, Dreadly, tell people how they can travel to the bowels of hell to find you.
Well, you'll find all those balls of hell on thedreadzone.com. Where you'll find all links to all places where I am hanging out. And where can people find you, Wicket?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter and Twitch at WickedKitten13. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I hope we made it a little harder to fall asleep tonight. And